Well, coming up on the local news hour this morning, we'll be checking in with Summit County Councilmember Glenn Wright. Betsy Wallace is managing director of the Sundance Institute, along with Ralph Rivera. He's director of operations. They've got an update of what's new for Sundance 2018. Also be checking in with Assistant Park City Fire Chief Mike Owens and PIO Tricia Hazelrigg, taking a look at some safety tips of the winter, what's ahead for the fire district next year, and boy, a look at those California wildfires. Park City Planning Commission Chairman Adam Strong also has an update on yesterday's meeting where they saw some new plans, A, B, and C. Stay tuned. Summit County Council met for the final time this year in the studio with a recap of last night's public hearing, which attracted more than 30 people to a special hearing on Chapter 3 of the East County Code. Is Councilmember Glenn Wright, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So among the comments, former Eastside Planning Commissioner Mike Brown said that the council hasn't clearly said just what problems you're trying to solve. How do you respond to that?
I would say that's inaccurate, although the good part is I think I agree with a lot of what Mike said as the solutions to our problems. We identified with the map that was given to us problems that would have affected traffic and water quality on the east side of the county. And we didn't think that placing houses every 75 feet down the main roads in the eastern part of the county on well and septic was going to do anything but deteriorate both the water quality and the traffic issues. So those are things that we've been wrestling with. Whenever you do a code change or a zoning change, you're always balancing the issues of property rights versus community health, safety, and welfare. And that's been the, you know, kind of the balancing act we've tried to talk about since their recommendations came to us. I'll point out that we were given actually three chapters to approve, and we approved chapters 2 and 4 with relatively minor changes. It's chapter 3 in the map and the zoning districts that's caused everybody most heartache.
So what this would do is replace the highway corridor zone, kind of that linear development, with what are known as AG5 and AG10, basically agriculture, one unit per 5, one unit per 10.
That's correct. That's what we're looking at right now as a possible solution. And also a new element to the Chapter 3 is something called the Village Overlay Zone, which will address historic villages that are not towns in the eastern part of the county and give them the opportunity to increase density where there may be opportunities to build infrastructure. We had extensive discussions with the cities on the east side during this process. And what we got from them is a desire not to use the highway corridor going into their towns and to have much more limited density in their annexation zones. So it would give people, that you know, landowners that wanted to be annexed into the city where there are where we have infrastructure, motivation to come to the city and say, okay, yeah, I've got 1 to 10 zoning here. I'd like to come into your city with and hook onto your infrastructure, but I need more density in that. And then they have a negotiation and typically will come to, you know, some kind of agreement.
So overall, is this a down zone of the east side?
We're trying to avoid that. To start the discussions off last night, Chair Robinson went through the map in detail and looked at certain areas where he thought perhaps that could be an issue. And we had some public input from some people who were individually – that thought they were going to be individually affected by downzoning. So we're going to try to address those issues. Be honest with you, I'm not sure we can satisfy everybody, but we're trying to do the best we can to satisfy most people.
Well, two of those were former County Council member David Ure and his son and former Planning Commissioner Chris Ure, who said getting rid of the corridor, highway corridor, would dramatically reduce the density they have along Lambert Lane in Camas. You were out there, I guess.
Yeah.
You visited the Ures. In fact, Chris said you were the only council member to get manure on your shoes. So what's your take on their complaint?
Well, certainly they're right in that they'll lose density in Lambert Lane. But overall, on their property, they have the potential, depending on whether they go to AG10 or AG5, to pretty much break even. Now, it's going to be more more difficult for them to develop, because under the old highway corridor and the AG1 proposed districts, it was pretty much, you got the land, bring in your building, your application for a building permit. There'll be a little more. There are some more opportunities for them to develop under the MPD process, which is a little more complex.
So do they need to petition you then to get that AG5?
No, they do not. We heard their issues on that last night. And I think we're coming to a fairly good consensus, because what we heard from several of the potential the landowners in these areas last night is they would be okay with AG5 with sewer if we had sewer infrastructure. So that's one of the things where that is going to be part of our last deliberations. And Chair Robinson and Councilmember Clyde are going to be going over all the testimony and discussions we've had over the last 6 months or so, and coming up with hopefully a final decision for us to vote on.
You also had complaints that the process has taken too long, too repetitious. Mike Brown again saying it's like Groundhog Day. So are we on the right track, and how soon before a decision?
I have a lot of sympathy with him on that. I think it has taken a long period of time, but I think what's actually happened, as I said, I think we are coming to a consensus, having more public discussion about this. As I said initially, we have to balance property rights and health, safety, and welfare of the community. And I think the discussions we've had over the last year are channeling us in on some final decisions that I think will satisfy most people.
First quarter of 2018, is that what you're saying?
We're hoping to get there, yes. I would be very happy if we did it in January. We have been working on it for a while. I'd like to get it off our desks.
All right. Let's see. You got some impromptu complaints during public comment. This one concerned the cease and desist order that the council directed on the parcel in the preserve north of I-80. The parcel has an illegal road maintenance facility operated by a company called Fredco. You heard from representatives of Homeowners Association up there for Gossock and Bittner Ranch Road. They said that they have contracted with Fredco for service on their roads, which are private. So they're saying that they're left in the lurch if Fredco has to cease and desist, and they're asking to be allowed to operate to get through this window. So what do you guys do?
Well, it has been they've gotten a lawyer, and they've appealed it, and it's going to go to an ALJ, administrative law judge, to decide whether a delay is proper. But as Chair Robinson pointed out to the folks that were talking about this issue, we're not stopping Fredco from plowing the roads. They've signed contracts to plow the roads in those areas. It's his obligation to figure out how to get it done. And if he can't, then they can go out and hire somebody else to do it.
That's really a
contractual issue between the landowners and the HOAs out there and Fredco.
So what they're prohibited of is keeping their equipment in this illegal maintenance facility.
Yes. And the reason we asked for a cease and desist order there is because other neighbors had come in and said, look at this mess. And some of the pictures we were shown, were pretty deplorable. The area is a mess. And our enforcement people say, there is a potential project in the works to possibly fix it, but we don't have any type of time frame on when that's going to happen. It has to first go to the Planning Commission. There's some zoning or exception issues that have to be dealt with at that level. It may eventually come to us, and then they've got to build it. It could be a year or two before the issues are resolved from new construction. So we thought the the violations were egregious enough when we saw the pictures that we asked for enforcement action to take place.
Okay, real quick, I wanted to ask you, last week you had asked the TCFC with regard to the Canyon Spa approval to commit to 100% renewable energy building for the HVACs in the resort. Legally, you couldn't put this in their amended spa master plan, but they did add some language to the approval of the assessment district. Are you happy with that?
I am. I think we've got come to a very good compromise on that particular issue. And I think we will have the most environmentally sound resort area built at the base of the canyons in any place in Utah as a result of our discussions with TCFC and the CVMA. I'm happy with what we accomplished there.
Yeah, but really, what does that language do? Just kind of give them a gold star if, in fact, they do it? Otherwise, nobody knows or nobody...
Well, one of the things we're going to implement, both at the Canyons spa area and we'll eventually do it countywide. We have to take it through a process in the code. Adopt a system similar to what Salt Lake City has adopted so that every building over 15,000 square feet gets a rating. So people will actually see how good the rating is, the environmental rating is on the building. And because most skiers are environmentalists and are concerned with global warming and saving our snow, we think that will be good motivation to build the very best buildings possible.
Okay. Glenn, anything else?
I think that's about it. I'd just like to wish the entire community a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from the County Council.
Okay.
And you too.
We'll see you next year. Thanks. What's new for the 2018 Sundance Film Festival? We invited Managing Director Betsy Wallace and Operations Manager Ralph Rivera to join us. They are in the studio with me now.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I guess no news is good news in the fact that I didn't have those usual calls and emails during the ticketing process for the film packages this year. It went okay?
Yeah, ticketing went actually very well. We had a lot of people calling in and emails, and it went very smooth with the team this year. We implemented some new processes, and that's probably why you did not hear that there were any issues.
Yeah, and we spent a lot of time over the summer really working on that system. So right now it's in a good spot, so we're excited about that.
Yeah, this was after a couple of vendor changes, and you found you found the right.
I think so. It really has been a night and day difference compared to last year, so it's great.
Good. Well, Sundance putting the final touches on its new theater. This is going to be called The Ray, formerly known as the Sports Authority. How many seats are we talking about here?
You know, it's a 500-seat theater. We're excited about it. It's still in the preparation stage, but it's top floor when you walk in, the main floor. That is the 500-seat theater. The lower floor of the theater is going to be all VR. And it's a 6,000 square foot area for VR, along with about a 2,000 square foot black box that this year we're going to have new Frontier work, VR work in there also. So we're really excited about it. And then just down the street, we're working with the Kimball Arts Center, and that's where we're going to hold all of our exhibition work for New Frontier. So we're really excited about both locations because it helps us move some of the foot traffic off Main Street, allows us to more evenly distribute folks around the city, and it gets us ready to see if and get people understanding how maybe the Arts and Culture District might work because it's all somewhat in that same area. So the big news also is that we're not closing Lower Main Street, which we're, I think many of us are excited about, and we'll see how it all goes. And everything that we have along where the Ray is and where Kimball Arts Center is all going to be accessed by buses. So it's free buses, easy to get to, walkability. We're excited about it.
Yeah. What about the parking there that for the Temple Theater, which is now being used as employee parking for Old Town?
Yeah. So for us, you know, that was a bummer that we didn't get to have that. But that being said, we've moved on and we're going to use Richardson Flat to be able to, again this year, to be able to park people out that way. We have a very active bus system. We've worked hard with the city to figure out timing, what's the best way to get people around. And barring any crazy weather like we had last year, it should be very very smooth and straightforward. We have two bus stops right around what we're calling now the Theater District, which is where Park Avenue or the Yarrow Theater is, and where the Ray, the Sports Authority, is in the Holiday. So that's all sort of a condensed theater district, and we have two bus stops there, and we have a bus stop in front of the Kimball Arts Center. So it really is, I think, going to be a lot easier to get around town.
So that Temple Theater bus stop will be which one of those? In front of the Kimball, then? Is
yeah,
that how you're going
to? Exactly right. So then you can get down to, if you're getting down to Temple, it would just be a straight shot down to the Temple. So
okay. The VR then, under the basement area of the Ray, then, is that going to be the ticketed area for the
VR? It is, yeah. That's going to be a ticketed VR piece, which we're excited about. You know, it really is a great program, and we have great content coming this year. We've been searching internationally for great content, and I think it's going to be really a smash-up year. So it will be ticketed, absolutely.
Yeah. Have those tickets been offered yet?
No, ticketed. The tickets to the public and to pass and packages have not started to be fulfilled yet. And so as soon as they do, the schedule's out so you can decide if you want to, you know, get them or not. We hope you do. But that all will start pretty soon.
Okay. Those were like, you got like about 50 minutes. Is that what we're going to keep it at?
I think it's going to be a right around, some will be 30 minutes and some will be about 50 minutes. So it'll be a couple different options. But it's still long enough that you can see it. And it's going to be room after room after room of different pieces to it, but each one will be ticketed.
Okay. Are we going to have Base Camp back on Bob Wills Plaza here?
We are going to have, not Base Camp, but Acura will be taking over the space here at Bob Wills Plaza this year.
Okay, so we had a lot of music acts and stuff. That would be the same then?
They're still working out their scheduling. We're going to have some music acts. There's going to be a lot of interactive things with monitors and whatnot. So there will be some of that as well.
Okay, so at the Ray, the genre of films, I mean, you kind of tend to put different films in different locations. So with 500, is that going to where the competition films are going to be? Or?
Well, you know, the biggest piece is going to be our new section, which is indie episodic. And Ralph has a lot of detail on that, so I'm going to pass that to him.
Yeah, so, you know, over the last few years, episodic has been big all over the festival circuit and all over new media. And we're very happy that we are implementing this new section. We've previously shown OJ Made in America, Top of the Lake, and The Jinx, some of the things that we've shown in the past. It's mainly going to be on Tuesday and Wednesday of the festival, and we'll be showing programs in multiple episodes like we have for our shorts programs.
Okay, so that'll be at the Ray then, the episodic
stuff. Yeah, that'll be at the Ray, and we do have a couple premieres and some great movies also at the Ray, so we're really excited about it. You know, we've been working with Dolby and their Atmos system, which is going to be phenomenal. So we're very much looking forward to showcasing that theater.
So the theater seating in the Ray, that's permanent. That's a permanent installation.
Well, it's permanent in that. Not totally permanent. Should we decide to pull it out and use it for something else, we can do that. It's very similar to the Mark, where the Mark we disassemble. It just looks very permanent when you walk in. Seats are screwed down and all that. Same thing as the Mark. It's identical to that. So should that have to be moved out, we could do that. It just takes a couple of days to be able to do it.
Yeah. So what are your plans? Because you've leased it for a year, 5 years? Or?
Well, it's really a 5-year lease with 2 5-year options, so up to 15 years. At this point, we wanted to see how the theater would showcase itself and decide after that what to do. So at this point, we don't have any long-term plans other than during the festival. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to start thinking about it. We were just excited about the opportunity, and we put our entire focus on trying to get that theater built out, which is what we focused on.
Yeah. So this actually becomes your second biggest theater then, or I don't know, it's the Mark at about 500?
Yeah, they're pretty much all, the Mark is about the same. So after the Eccles, it's these theaters.
Okay. And then to use that theater, the Ray, in the future, you would need to come back to the city for different permitting?
That's right, Leslie. We'd have to come back for that.
Okay. Let's talk about the free screenings for the community.
That's
We're going to offer more of those. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it is.
We have 4 free late-night screenings that are going to happen in Park City. First weekend will be Saturday and Sunday, and the following weekend will be Friday and Saturday. We also have our Townie Tuesday coming back, which is popular. And also the Best of Fest. And both the Townie Tuesday and Best of Fest, those tickets will be distributed on January 13th at the main box offices in Park City, Salt Lake, and at the resort. And Monday, the 29th at the Eccles is when the Best of Fest will be shown.
Right. Main box office still at the Gateway?
Main box, yep, it's still at the Gateway.
All right. Do we know what's going to be shown, or is that going to be kind of a TBA?
TBA. Secret. Surprise. keep you on the edge of your seat.
And so with those free screenings, and that will be done not necessarily by tickets that you pick up like you would with Best of Fest, but you would get those through going on the waitlist system. Something.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So it's going to run through the e-waitlist system. Once they're announced, you can go on, you get on a e-waitlist, and you really want to just make sure about 2 hours ahead of time that you have your number, you get to the theater. It's something we're really excited to be able to offer, and we didn't want to ticket it, and we wanted a way to control it, also to understand how many people would be there. So e-waitlist is the route to go.
Okay. You said late night. We're talking like midnight screenings, or?
It's about 11 to 11:30. It is late. It is relatively late, yes.
Okay. And those screenings are going to be done where? Do we know what theater?
We do not know the theater.
Yeah, I think at this point we don't. We're trying to just get the rest of the programming filled, and it will be 4 up here and 2 down in Salt Lake, so it's going to be great.
Okay. You've also got a new interactive map. What's this?
Well, this is a map that we used to have years ago, and we're really excited about bringing it back, especially on pre-fest as people are trying to understand where to lodge, how this festival is going to come together, get themselves sort of oriented as to the festival. And it's on Sundance.org, and you can work your way through to the Sundance Film Festival map, and it allows you to understand where all the venues are. Especially our new one, the two that we have, which is the Ray and the Kimball, so you can get a sense of how that works. It also allows you to understand where stores are, where lodging is. So it's really trying to get people ready to step into the experience. It will go away once our mobile app comes on, and then the mobile app will also have a map system to it, a little less interactive because at that point it's just getting people around. It'll have many of the same features, but it'll be just a little bit less interactive.
Okay. So when do those individual ticket sales go on?
For locals, noon on January 11th, and the public sales start noon on the 16th, Tuesday of January.
Okay. Also wanted to mention you're offering a new award. This is the Festival Favorite Award. How is this different than the Audience Award?
That's a good question. This one we're really excited about. We're voting, or allowing everybody to vote on every feature film. And so historically, it had to be by category. So if a category wasn't going to receive an award, you didn't vote on it. And some people can remember not getting the little square that you can vote with. But now you're going to receive them at almost every single movie. And what we wanted to get a feel for and allow the Favorite Audience Award to shine. That being said, that award won't go out until Tuesday after the festival closes. We're very keen on keeping the integrity of the different category awards, which are very, very important to not only people coming to the film festival, but for the directors and for the filmmakers and for the industry. So it's important that we keep those that integrity there. But we're excited to also say, hey, this is the favorite film audience-wise, encapsulating everything. So exciting for us.
So there will be a ballot then at every screening of everything?
There will be, So where in the past maybe you didn't get them, you'll have them everywhere this time.
All right. And finally, for RuPaul fans, this sounds fun, the Next Innovator Award. Tell me about this.
The Next Innovator Award is an award for our favorite film of our next section, which is for emerging artists and directors. We'll also be hosting a retrospective on RuPaul's Drag Race as they prepare for their 10th season coming up. We're really excited to have him. When it was announced to the staff, it was pretty exciting.
Went through like wildfire. It was great.
Well, I know Coop was pretty excited about it. Yeah. So he's going to be like a one-man jury then.
He's a one-man jury for the next section. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. And again, that's just for the next section, which is kind of
Kind of
a different section, right?
It is. So it's, that's one thing that I love all the different categories for, is that you can narrow down what you're really interested in. And Next is one of those. They've been films that are in other festivals, and we're excited about them, and they're coming back in, and it's all great.
Yeah. So you got the final schedule yet? Because I know we've seen Spurlock's film being pulled. We've seen some, was it Lucy?
Mm-hmm.
Her name's missing me, but she kind of pulled hers out. She had it unnamed, so I think she's got named. Lucy Walker, that's what I'm trying to think of, yes.
Yeah, so their film team's elected to pull their films, and so we are pushing through some film to replace each of one of those, which is still in the process. But the film slotting has been done, and we're excited about that to be presented and everybody getting a hold of it and finding what their favorites are. That's one thing that's being added to our mobile app, is that you can go through as you're looking through the guide and going, hey, you know what, that's my favorite. You can highlight it with a star. And then when you start to fulfill it, you can go back in and it automatically says, hey, remember, this was one of your favorites. Don't forget to see if you want to still get it. So it's a great feature.
Okay. And for the way you guys have kind of split your duties, it seems like it's working well.
No? Yeah, it's been great. I'm so excited that Ralph's here. You know, his background is from Los Angeles. He did the LA Film Festival. We couldn't ask for a better person coming in. And from my role, it allows me to really look forward to the strategic planning part of Sundance. And it's a nice marriage. So it's been great.
Okay. Betsy and Ralph, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joining me now in the studio from the Park City Fire District, Fire Chief Paul Hewitt, Assistant Chiefs Bob Zanetti, and Mike Owens. Good morning to all of you.
Top of the morning, Leslie.
Morning.
Okay, we came in just to talk a little bit about winter safety. I mean, it doesn't need to be. We've got, of course, lots of lights with Christmas trees, but it's not such a big deal anymore, is it? Everyone's using LEDs?
Well, you know, let's talk about winter safety and holiday safety. So I'll take you for a ride in my car and me waking up this morning, which will get to some points here. So I live in Upper Pine Brook. The driveways are steep, and I was a paramedic for a lot of years, so everything I'm going to tell you about how you can get hurt and injured in this area, I've seen happen. So a steep driveway, I've seen a lot of broken hips. One of my worst injuries was from a slip on ice and a fall. I put slip-on spikes on my shoes to snowblow my driveway, go to any emergency room and ask the ER docs and nurses if they've seen snowblower injuries. They've seen a plenty of those. People tend to stick their hands in the snowblower chute every year. They'll do it and they'll lose fingers. So be careful with your snowblower. Have winter tires on your car. Now I drive out of the house, right? I get my driveway snowblowed this morning. Drive out on my, Chief Zanetti makes fun of me because I love my Blizzak tires, but they are a no-slip tire and they're a far safer ride in cars. Be very careful. Give yourself plenty of following distance. Another thing that really worries me in our neighborhoods, for example, where I live in Pine Brook, no sidewalks. So kids are, they're encroached by the snow on the sides of the road, and they're walking down the middle of the street in dark. They're not always lit up. They're not wearing lightly colored clothes, and they're hard to see. So that really worries me. Watch out for pedestrians. Give yourself plenty of follow time. Now I'm on Kilby Road headed to administration. I come up on a car. It's still dark when I'm going up there, and they don't have their lights on. So I flashed, if this car is listening to me right now, I flashed my brights at this car, and they very quickly turn their lights on. So leave your lights on, even on when it's lit about like this. Make it safer for you. We have, and I have seen, this area has seen people die from ice sliding off of roofs, right? You can be injured. So be aware of your surroundings. Know where you're parking. Talk to your kids about heavy snow loads and ice. They're going. It's not if, it's when. These loads are going to fall off the roof and hit whatever is below them. So be aware of your surroundings. Now when you get back to your house from work, let's talk a little bit about, I'm the fire chief, and I've seen a lot of gunshot injuries that were unintended, right? Guns are very prevalent in our community. Kids spend a lot of time in the houses in the winter. And they're bored, so they're opening up closets. And I've seen, unfortunately, kids open up a closet and discharge a shotgun and die from it. So, you know, I have a lot of firearms, and I have them in a locked gun cabinet with trigger locks on them, and the closet is actually locked with an exterior lock. So take your gun safety very seriously. Go through your house, make sure everything's safe. Now on to holiday safety. Again, kids are in your house a lot more in the winter. So they're going to be wandering around the stove, and if you're boiling water or making candy or caramels, burn injuries are a big problem at this time of the year with kids wandering around. So leave your pot handles turned away so kids don't dump the scalding water on them. A pot of boiling water will and have killed children in the past. So be really cognizant. I got teased out here while we were waiting that Chief Zanetti was telling me that I still use lit candles on my Christmas tree. But the fact is UL approved lighting, it is really time that you look at the lights that you have, and anything other than LED, you're pretty much out the door now. If you haven't done it this season, look at your your lights and swap them out for LEDs. They're cool burning. They're far safer than the others. They're pretty much all fused nowadays and take away a lot of the danger of lighting. So there's just a few.
Okay. Who wants to talk about digging out fire hydrants? That's another one I know that you need to deal with.
You know, before I was
we'd like to be able to dig fire hydrants out. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. We as the fire district love it when they are dug out. Before I became the fire marshal, I was a firefighter here in Park City for 12 years, and we dug out a whole lot of fire hydrants. Unfortunately, some of those were during a fire, and it delays our fire attacks by a decent amount of time. And that can be the difference between a saved structure and a non-saved structure. But, you know, what we ask the citizens to do, just take a look at your fire hydrant, not just snow, but if it's covered by shrubs or bushes, anything that's going to block our access to that fire hydrant is a big deal. It is your responsibility. If the fire hydrant is on your property, it's your responsibility to dig it out.
Okay. Bob, do you want to talk a little bit about carbon monoxide monitors?
Sure.
And how important people have one of those?
We've done a couple of large campaigns in the past, and we're feeling pretty good. You know, the building codes are behind us on this. So most of the new builds, it's standard in the homes. But a lot of people don't know what to do when they do go off. So the thing that you don't do is you don't call me at home and ask me.
Sounds like
I'm
that's
just
happened.
Kidding. That's happened a number of times. No, that's fine. When they go off, I mean, it's something in your house that there's a possibility that the batteries are dead. That's the first thing. And if you're by yourself or if your kid's, the best thing to do is go ahead, get outside, call 911. If there's a parent home, you know, everybody's feeling fine, do a little investigation, you know, look at your heating sources and that sort of thing. But, you know, they work. They save lives. So that's really it. I mean, if you don't know what to do, get outside and call 911.
Yeah, so the ones that they're putting in new construction are now built in as opposed to just the ones that you just plug in yourself?
Correct. Yeah, correct. You can get both. You can get smoke detectors and CO detectors combination.
Well, they're typically – so they're hardwired, but they have a plug, and they do have a life expectancy on them. I think it's, what, 10 years, Mike?
Once the carbon monoxide detectors hit 7 years, they start going bad. Smoke detectors can last about 10 years. Anything that's older than that needs to be replaced. The little sensors inside get worn out; they get dusty and dirty. It's time to replace them.
I went through. I have my house was built in 2004, and mine started to give it up and were malfunctioning. So I got on Amazon and ordered some that were plug and play. They fit perfectly. I tell people about carbon monoxide detectors too. If you take the carbon monoxide detector out, disconnect the battery, take it out to fresh air, blow it out, and then put your battery back in, and it keeps going off, it's probably malfunctioning. But never take those alarms lightly, and make sure that your carbon monoxide detectors are replaced.
Yeah,
like
and we hear about
says every 7 years.
And we hear about it every year, I mean, right? I mean, people can get very sick
and
die.
Every year.
Yeah. And one more thing I wanted to hit on was just chimneys. And mm-hmm. we've got a lot of wood-burning fireplaces, and you see at least one of those every year, right?
Yeah, the one I always tell here on KPCW is the gentleman that was up here, I believe, in Deer Valley and tried to feed a 10-foot Christmas tree into the fireplace and burn it a little bit at a time, like a fuse, and lit the whole place on fire. I think there was a little bit of bourbon involved in that one. So the bourbon was an accelerant in an indirect form. But, yeah, and the other thing I'd like, Chief Sinetti's our operations chief, so his men and women respond to 6,000 calls for help a year. And I asked Chief Sinetti to talk a little bit about what you do when you see a big fire engine in your rearview mirror and the lights and the siren are flashing.
Yeah, so we're coming into our busy, busy week, Christmas week. A lot of traffic on the roads. A lot of people that aren't from here. And a lot of emergency calls. So when we're responding, We try to, you know, respond 1040. That's non-lights and sirens, unless it's a true emergency. But there'll probably be a number of true emergencies this week. So if you do see something coming or you hear the sirens coming, don't freak out. Take your time. It's better to take your time. Pull off to the right. That's all we ask. It's better to stay where you're at. And if you can't get over to the right, and we'll get around you. But don't get nervous and just maintain control on the roads, and we'll maneuver our way through.
Okay. Well, hope we keep it happy and safe. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks.
Well, the Treasure Partnership wants to add new roads as part of the new plans. The applicant, Park City 2 LLC, offering up three plans for the footprint of the new scaled-back version of Treasure. Joining me now in the studio to talk a little bit more about that, Planning Commission Chairman Adam Strong. Good morning.
Morning.
So I guess this was the first time you saw all three of these maps, which I've kind of got in front of me. They were just taken with a cell phone here. But we've got A, B, and C. Basically, really just what changes, the biggest difference in them, where the houses are, where the boutique hotel is, or?
You mean what changes between each of the three?
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, the location of where the hotel would go. It's hard to describe for radio listeners, but what you've got in front of you is kind of a plat map showing roads, potential lot lines for the 18 residential homes, and then in various colors are the proposed hotel, boutique hotel locations. So it's basically, they were bouncing these off us to figure out whether what location would be the preferred one for a hotel of this size.
Okay. So are these hotel building schematics that they have here 100,000 square feet plus?
Well, those are just the building footprints. So we don't really know yet what the square footage would be of the hotel. But it's going to be 100,000, you know, net based on the UEs that have that remain after the buy down if and when the bond passes. So these are basically just locational drawings, asking the Planning Commission, if we put it here, would that be a non-starter? If we put it there, would it be a non-starter? And if we put it there, would it be a non-starter? And I think the only one that drew some criticism was the A proposal, which puts the hotel right up against Lowell Avenue, and it you know, would be pretty close to the existing residential homes, whereas the other proposal C puts the hotel pretty far up the Creole Ski Run, kind of to looker's right if you were at the base of the Creole Ski Run before it makes a right to return to the town lift.
Okay, so I mean, I understand people can't see, but this is basically the Lowell and Empire horseshoe right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right, so maybe we can do a better description of it when we write up the
I think they're
the
available
on
the city's website now, so
okay.
People
okay.
can look there.
So what the Planning Commission, is it fair to say, leaning towards Plan C?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the plan that the Planning Commission gave the most positive feedback on. You know, this is so preliminary at this point that I'd be reluctant to say that the Planning Commission, you know, gave a big green light to Plan C. But just in terms of broad location, Plan C seemed to garner the most support.
And what are these smaller little squares?
Those would be smaller little cabins, you know, little single room units.
For?
The boutique hotel.
Okay. In terms of, I guess, all three of the plans, all of them kind of cross the existing MPD boundary lines. The Planning Commission, though, willing to be a little bit flexible with this and just redefine those boundaries?
Yeah, as part of this process, at the end of the day, we're going to be amending the MPD to conform to the settlement agreement. And that we may be, as City Attorney Harrington said, we may be doing a rezone as well. So this is a very, very different plan. It's a dramatically different plan than what we saw before. And so the locations of the buildings, you can put buildings that are much smaller in size in different places and reduce the impacts by doing that. So I think that's kind of what the applicant's trying to do.
Yeah. Are we taking out any ski runs here?
No. The existing ski runs and the existing town lift would remain the same or substantially the same. And the applicant last night, you know, was asked about, well, what about the cabriolet? What about kind of the two-tiered lift system that the prior applicant proposed? And he said, well, they'd be open to reconfiguring the town lift along those lines, he says the economics of the project on this much smaller scale just may not support doing that. So as of now, I think the town lift is going to remain the way it is.
All right. And then in terms of some tunneling, would that need to be done? Tunneling under to allow the ski runs or no?
No, I think at most we'd be looking at some bridges for one, maybe two of the roads that would go in. Bridges, you know, I would sort of liken to the ones that go over the runs off Mountaineer at Deer Valley and the Jordanelle development. Probably a little bit smaller, but there's not going to be any tunneling.
So the rezone would be required because I guess outside of that MPD boundary, it's recreation open space, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but it's still Sweeney property that what had been dedicated to Park City?
Yes, yep.
In terms of back of house, that was brought up and the importance of making sure everyone's on the same page. During public comment, one person suggested that the applicant get a design expert to help convey their concepts clearly to both the Planning Commission and the public. Is that going to happen?
Well, you know, I don't know. That is, remember, the essence of this settlement agreement is to buy down a majority of the density and to get to an agreement that has back of house and all the other specifics that we've been struggling with so much through this 18-month process nailed down. It may not be that we see a finalized agreement with all types of house types and boutique hotel renderings and, you know, window sizes and siding material examples. That I don't think is what we're shooting for. I think what we are shooting for here is an MPD document that dramatically reduces the mass, bulk, and scale of what goes in up there and identifies the locations where the things may go and leaves the applicant with the ability to transfer or sell that right to a developer who would then come in and provide the specifics of what the boutique hotel siding and windows and lighting would look like. I mean, it's a long answer to your question, but I don't think that's the essence. I don't think that's what we're shooting for here.
So how big are the lots? Are they historic, 75 by 75?
No, they will be bigger than that. Some will be smaller, but none will be as small as 75 by 25, at least not that I've seen. The lots were not part of the discussion last night. Obviously, the hotel is probably the element of the plan that has the biggest impact. So I think City Attorney Harrington and Anne Laurent wanted to, and the applicant wanted to talk about that first.
Okay. And real quick, is this the town lift here? So would there be some unloading and loading then for the hotel? That alignment there?
Yeah, there. No, the town lift goes, sorry, it's hard for listeners, but the town lift goes down here.
Okay.
So, you know, the hotel position, if you're a mountain biker, it is near that beautiful little switchback section that goes up Sweeney's before you get to Flat Cable, which often has awesome colors in the summertime.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Adam, thanks for your time. Chairman of the Park City Planning Commission, Adam Strong. This is KPCW Park City.